Hello, my name is Monty Rowland. I'm with Monty Design in Morrisville, North Carolina. We're a product development firm. We provide services to take your product from concept to prototype to market. Our tagline is that we build products. Today, I wanted to have a chat for a few minutes and talk about rapid prototyping. Rapid prototyping has become a generic term that means building a prototype quickly. When people say, can you build a rapid prototype, they usually are thinking somewhere in the back of their mind an SLA type process because that's what they've seen and been exposed to. Anymore, there's a fairly wide variety of processes available. And we'll talk a little bit more about how rapid machining and rapid sheet metal fits into that. From a rapid prototyping perspective, I want to break this down into two types of rapid prototypes. The first is subtractive rapid prototyping, and the other is additive rapid prototyping. Subtractive rapid prototyping is where you take a block of material and you take material away. Additive rapid prototyping is where you add material and build up the prototype. Kind of one paradigm is to think about you print it. With additive rapid prototyping, there's a variety of processes and they get better every year. The processes run a gamut of cost and accuracy and resolution and surface finish. The most commonly thought of process when you talk about rapid prototyping is stereolithography. Stereolithography is the one that everybody's seen in the movies, and we've all seen parts. And stereolithography is where you have a tank of polymers, or to be more precise, photosensitive cross-linking polymers, and you take a laser and you focus that laser on a point in 3D space in that vat of liquid, and where that laser focuses, it actually hardens that polymer or cross-links that polymer. And by starting at the bottom of the part, you can build up. You can get a variety of shapes. It's very accurate. Over the years, it's gotten better. I remember 20 years ago, you had a very, very expensive SLA part, and maybe 15 years ago, you had a very expensive SLA part, and you were afraid to touch it because you were afraid it was going to break. Now, a lot of these materials are pretty doggone tough. So SLA is great for quick. You can get parts very quickly. The parts are very accurate. They're fairly durable, depending on the material. Some materials are more durable than others. And the cost is kind of middle of the road. So when we think about cost, I'll get on a tangent here for a second. When you make an additive rapid prototype, generally you're paying for the volume. And you're also paying for the time on the machine. When you look at this SLA machine, the machine actually is broken down into three directions. You've got XY, which is the floor of the tub or the tank. And then Z is the height off the tank. Because of how the machine works, it's cheaper to or less expensive to create material as the laser beam passes. It focuses at a certain height, so you do one layer at a time. Think of the analogies printing, but if you can imagine, you took a sheet of paper and you cut out the shape that piece of paper represents and laid it on the ground. You did it, took another sheet of paper, cut out a shape, laid it on top of it. Eventually, you would have thickness, and you would have this part that's built up one layer at a time. It's less expensive to print more material in a layer, And it's more expensive to print height just because of how the machine works and how thin the slices are. So a tall part can be fairly expensive because it has to stay in the machine for so long. And it's a function too. If they put a bunch of parts in a machine at once, not just yours. So they may be running a half inch tall part and a 3 inch tall part. Well, they can't pull the parts out of the machine or out of the vat until the tallest part is done. So printing that part ties up the machine for this amount of time. So the net effect is that tall parts are just more expensive in some, especially in some processes. Now, what they will do too is that the vendor will orient your part in a direction that's the least expensive to make, unless you have an accuracy or resolution requirement. You can imagine pretty quickly that the XY axis is a little more accurate than the Z axis, because as you add layers, it's not as accurate as just printing something on a single layer. So the dimensions in X and Y are the most accurate, and dimensions Z are a little less. So there's other reasons why you might have to orient a part one way or the other. And also support too, because you've got to be able to support the part as you make it. But SLA is a pretty wonderful process. We've seen a variety of materials. Some of the new materials are really, really wonderful. You can also plate an SLA part, and which gives you a very tough outer skin. That's used in a process to actually make, in some cases, temporary tooling. So there's a lot you can do with that. On the other end of the spectrum for additive processing is the Z-Corp part. Now with the SLA, you've got a machine that, you know, you might have $250,000 or $500,000 in a machine. You've got a trained operator. So there's a lot of overhead that goes with it. Z-Corp came in on the other end and they said, we're going to make less detailed parts and we're going to print them just like your printer does for paper. We're going to print a part that way using a very similar process. So Z-Corp parts aren't as durable as the SLA parts. So for a functional part, Z-Corp may not be a good option, but they're quick in printing, so you can get a part back fairly quick. And because they're quick and the material's inexpensive and the printer's less expensive, your part's less expensive. So there's some nice trade-offs there. The Z-Corp parts are somewhat brittle, whereas the SLA parts are fairly flexible. It is important to note that with any of these rapid prototyping processes, they're great and in some cases functional, but the lifetime is usually fairly limited. You make a moving part as an SLA or just about any additive process, and that part, the lifetime of that part is much, much less than, let's say, an injection molded part. Something to keep in mind. Another process that we use a lot is what's called SLS. We'll go to Fine Line in Raleigh, and they've got SLS machine and selective laser sintering. It takes a little longer to get the parts, but the parts are made of a nylon type material that's very durable. So as far as a functional part that's long lasting, that's probably one of the longest lasting processes, it creates the longest lasting parts, the SLS process. The surface finish is pretty not impressive. It looks kind of like a Z-Corp part in a lot of ways. It's a rough surface finish. But you get a part that's you can actually test with. There are other alternatives to that. Stratasys has an ABS type process that, for those of y'all aren't familiar, of course the material ABS, it has, the material they use has similar properties to ABS, and you get a fairly functional part. The resolution and the surface finish is nowhere near as nice as an SLA, but at the same time you can get a big part fairly inexpensively. There's other technologies, there's Objet, which can create a very, very fine surface finish and can also mix different types of materials within the object material library in the same part. Several of these processes allow you also to print different colors. Z-Corp can do that. Some of the object machines can. So you can color code your part, or you can put marketing information or what have you. And so as you're going through these processes, you get to the object and you see these just gorgeous parts that are very accurate and great surface finish. The trade-off is that you're not going to make a really large object part generally because of the cost and the build volume of the machines. There are SLS machines with big build volumes, maybe 2 feet by 2 feet by 2 feet, or SLA machines the same. And Z-Corp machines that aren't quite as big, but good-sized build volumes. But like on the object, a large part would be so expensive, because it's a slow process with an expensive material, that you usually only use that process with high-precision smaller parts. There are also some exotic processes where you can actually use a metal and rapid prototype directly with a metal. But those aren't as common. They have some other drawbacks that you have to work around, and the cost is an issue. So the common ones you see are SLA, SLS. You may have someone that has a Stratasys machine or Z-Corp. And these are all additive processes or object. And there's some other ones out there. They're all additive processes that have slightly different advantages depending on what you're trying to do. Now, it's important to note that you need to match the prototyping process to the need and to the audience. All these prototyping processes have different price points and delivery dates. And so you want to make sure that you're meeting your stakeholder or your clients or customers' expectations. And you also want to do that in a cost-effective way, and you want to meet the functional requirements. So if you have a part that has to be functional, then SLA, SLS, or possibly object if it's a small part and you don't have a lot of cycles, or a Stratasys process, then you can have that functional part. But if it also has to be what's called a pretty part, but there's a high value placed on the aesthetics, so say the boardroom, then maybe you need to look towards the SLA because it's easy to paint, it's easier to finish, you can get a just gorgeous part. And so as you're working through all these processes, you may, in a project, it's not uncommon for us to use different processes within the same project. The other thing to consider is that you can also take your rapid prototype and use it as a master, build a soft tool around it, and then get silicone parts that have properties that are similar to, let's say, ABS or a Santoprene if you want something softer. And so that's another thing to always keep in mind, is that if you make a prototype and use it as a master, then you make a tool, and now you can pour parts from that, or you can pour that tool and get parts out of that tool, and those parts are less expensive than making a new rapid prototype every time. The other type of process is a subtractive process. So with a subtractive process, we're pretty much just machining material. The days of waiting 6 weeks for a prototype to be machined are just not really there anymore. The expectation is that you can get prototypes fairly quickly, and they can be machined prototypes. And so the waiting 6 weeks to get it back from the shop just is not as palatable anymore. So in order to accommodate that, there's several ways you can get parts back. One way is to use a vertical machining center and program it with your traditional processes, but do it in a rapid way. So there's machine shops now that will program your part, get it on there, and cut it, and ship it to you, or bring it to you. the downside with traditional CNC programming is that you have to program it. So by that, you've got to take the part and set it up to be cut. So that means someone's got to decide, you know, what tool they're going to use. Generally, there's a piece of software similar to CAD software, and a lot of times it runs inside your CAD software, that'll create that tool path for you. And tool path is what the CNC machine uses to create your, to cut your part. So the shop will take that, program it, take it to the machine, and then cut it, do whatever setups they need to. Setup being, you've got to fixture the material, and then you've got to cut it. And let's say that you can't get to the back side of a part, because let's say the back side is what's laying on the top side of your vise. Then you've got to flip that part over and machine another side. Every time you have a different setup, there's cost, because someone has to manually decide how to set it up, zero the part, and then cut it. So for rapid machining, a lot of your cost is in setup and programming. Some parts, of course, you could do manually, and it may be, for simple parts, it may be less expensive to just create the part manually. You've got a machinist in front of a Bridgeport mill, and you're he's making your parts. There are also other options. There are these mini mills now where it's not a full-size vertical machining center, and it may vary anything from tabletop to what are actually called the mini mills, which is something that's about half the size of a vertical machining center. And it's not as expensive as a full-size machining center, but it has an awful lot of capability. There's also services like First Cut where you can send your geometry to them and they will create parts for you. And they've got this heavily automated as far as how they create tool path, how they cut them. So it's often a very economical way to get that quick prototype. It may very well be much cheaper than actually going to machine shop through a more conventional process for one or two pieces. So we've talked about subtractive and we've talked about additive. There's a couple other things that, a couple other processes that are important. One is rapid sheet metal. There's a couple of companies that provide sheet metal on a quick turn basis. We've used rapid sheet metal and we've used Incodema. And so they will create sheet metal parts for you in 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, fairly quickly, and then create lower quantities. Now, when you get a quote for rapid sheet metal, it is just like anything else. If you're making one or two of something, your setup generally is what really drives your cost up. So let's say that we're going to make 1 million parts. And let's say it takes 3 days to set up all the machines to make those parts. But what happens is, let's say the machine shop charges you $1,000 a day for setup. You got $3,000 in setup. Well, if you're going to run for 2 months and make 1 million parts, that amount gets amortized over the cost of each part, and it really is not a huge contributing factor. If you're going to make one part, and all of a sudden you've got 3 days worth of setup before you actually even make a part, you've got a part that costs $3,000 just to start. So that's always something to keep in mind when you do any sort of rapid prototyping and use a rapid machining or rapid sheet metal process, that your setup and your programming time is a huge driver. Another process that gets overlooked is the ability to do rapid tooling and make parts from those tooling. We talked about using a master part, usually from an SLA, to create a soft tool. With a soft tool, after you create the master part, within a week or so, you should start getting one or two parts a day out of that soft tool. And figure a tool is good for 20 to 25 parts before you have to make a new one, because a soft tool just has a limited lifetime. So you wait a few days, maybe a week, and you start getting your first couple of parts. And then after that, depending on the number of cavities in the soft tool, you might get one or two parts a day until you get your 25 parts. If you want to make a hard tool and injection mold it, then that's also available as a service. There's several companies that provide different levels of quick turn tooling. The trade-offs are sometimes painful enough that you may choose to wait a little longer and go a conventional route. But on the other hand, if you're early in the process and you're still trying to prove out a design, then having a low-cost tool that you get quickly is probably worth it. So a good example here would be we create a part that is ready to tool. If you're going to injection mold a part with rapid tooling, then your part needs to be ready to produce. Draft, no undercuts. You know, that you've thought that through, it's fully rendered. Then you can take that model and give it to the rapid tooling vendor. They'll take that and then they'll cut directly off that model. So you'll get back exactly what you asked for. So you don't have that master tool maker that's looking at your part for a while and double checking everything. They usually, the rapid tooling folks have an automated system, and what they do is they run it through the automated system. It looks for undercuts, it looks for places where there's no draft or not enough draft, and gives you a report. So you do miss out on that experienced toolmaker working through your tool with you. But you get a part back in 1, 2, 3 weeks, which is very quick. And the nice thing is that the tool is fairly inexpensive. There is a downside. The companies that do the rapid tooling are set up to do the tooling, make the parts, and go on. They don't do well with changes to the tooling. So you may have a $2,500, $3,000, $5,000, $7,000 tool that you got where you got parts in 2 weeks. But let's say you want to make a small change to the tool. The cost of making that change through the rapid tooling vendor may be more than just making a new tool. So that's something to keep in mind, is that it really is you make what you have in the model, get it, test it, and then you iterate again. We've had times where we wanted to make even very, very minor changes, and the cost was 2/3 of a new tool in that scenario. So hopefully this gives you an overview of processes. There's lots of vendors out there, and on a lot of projects, it's necessary to use multiple vendors. We've seen time and time again where we have clients that know all the processes, know where the vendors are, but would prefer to have someone come in like us and aggregate all those services, assemble the parts, do any hand work that needs to be done, and then hand over a finished prototype. That's something we're seeing more and more with the availability of all these processes. There's also the need to use these processes often in the same project. So once you put them all together, sometimes there's a need to tweak. And that's where having that machinist with a manual mill and a manual lathe in the back comes awful handy, because they can go make those small adjustments. And that's been valuable for us time and time again. I hope that this is helpful for you. I know this is kind of a long podcast, but it is intended to address some of the questions we get. If you have any additional questions, please don't hesitate to give me a call. It's Monty Rowland, 919-481-1845 or 1-800-722-7987, or shoot me an email, Monty, M-O-N-T-I-E, at Monty, M-O-N-T-I-E.com, or go to our website and there's a chat function, Monty, M-O-N-T-I-E.com. Have a great day, and if you have any questions, please contact me. If you have stuff that you'd like to see a podcast on, same thing, give me a call, shoot me an email, see what we can do. Thanks, and have a great day. Bye.
Yeah.